regular Sunday afternoon address of Father Charles E. Coughlin from Royal Oak, Michigan.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. In a few moments, Father Coughlin will deliver to you an address calculated to stir you to action. Action today. But first, permit me to advise the many thousands who have written to Father Coughlin during the past 2 weeks for the 200-page book containing the discourses which he has delivered so far this season. There is included in this book a 47-page official pronouncement on atheistic communism by Pius XI. And accurate pictures of certain disputed pages of the British White Paper, which Father Coughlin's opponents inferred did not exist. Let me advise all persons who requested a copy of this book that it is being mailed out as speedily as possible. It is free to all who ask for a copy. Whether or not you can afford to contribute towards its publication matters not. Most likely you will receive your copy by the end of this week. And now on Father Coughlin's behalf, let me ask you a series of questions. Do you wish to preserve American democracy? Do you realize that in the event of a declared war, the functions of democracy cease and America becomes a centralized government? Therefore, do you wish to avoid our entrance into a world war? If your answer to these questions is a rousing yes, therefore, are you in favor of strict neutrality, of keeping America out of the blood business? Many thousands will request a copy of the memorable address about to be delivered, an address which is calling you to action. And many thousands will rise to action on having listened to Father Coughlin, who will speak to you on the subject, The Rightists Go Into Action. Father Coughlin.
Good afternoon, my friends. Some time ago, I had the privilege of disclosing to this audience the existence of the May Bill, officially known as House of Representatives Bill number 9604. It is one of several bills already prepared or in the process of preparation, which have as their objective the complete centralization of all government in the hands of the president if and when war will be declared. Every American knows that centralization of government, or federalism, as it is sometimes called, is contrary to the spirit of American democracy. Thus, we are naturally alarmed in the face of these new proposals. During the World War, we experienced a process of centralization which weakened our states' rights, and which resulted in handing over to our central government at Washington many powers and activities which formerly were jealously guarded by our local governments. These rights have never been restored in full to their former status. When we prevision the passing of democracy, should war be declared, sober citizens ask themselves this practical question: is the federal government more capable and better equipped to manage the affairs of Minnesota, Indiana, New York, and the various states than are the states themselves? Communists and Nazis, both of whom adhere to the principle of a strong central government, answer in the affirmative. The disciples of George Washington, Jefferson, and Lincoln answer in the negative. Nationals, that is, those who believe in nationalism rather than in internationalism, also answer in the negative. So do Christians, who by no stretch of the imagination uphold the modern theory of internationalism. So do lovers of liberty, who recognize that it is unsound to put too much power into the hands of one man, even though he is a good man. A good man would not want so much power. And in the hands of a bad man, such power would be dangerous. However, the vast majority of American citizens seldom think in these terms. They are neither leftists, who uphold the international theories of Marx and Lenin, nor are they rightists, in the sense that intelligently and vigorously they uphold sane nationalism under which their liberties are safeguarded. Now, a practical problem confronts us. It is this. The May Bill, which unblushingly advocates a complete centralization of government, predicated upon the declaration of war, shows the trend of legislative thought in America. The same trend which was evident in Russia, in Germany, and elsewhere. And a practical question results from this problem. It is this. If we are sincere believers in American democracy, is it not reasonable for us to avoid all entanglements likely to involve us in war? Because if war eventuates, there is no doubt in my mind that our democracy will be destroyed. This question becomes even more practical when we recognize the logical sequence of events which are happening in our nation. They are these. More than 200 organizations were in session last week at Washington to petition the government to lift the embargo on Spain in favor of the loyalist communists. If the embargo will be lifted, and there is grave danger that it will be, then we will destroy our existing program of neutrality. If neutrality is replaced by a policy of aiding with arms, munitions, and money some foreign nation engaged in war, we become an ally to that nation and an enemy of its enemy. Theoretically and potentially, we are then at war. Practically and actually, we will be at war if this enemy belongs to a group of nations identified with communism or with Nazism. For sooner or later, these two worldwide forces will meet in open conflict. To preserve democracy, we must keep out of war. To keep out of war, we must hold ourselves clear from all foreign entanglements. And to keep clear of foreign entanglements, we must observe strict neutrality, which means we must not lift the embargo on Spain. These thoughts are rather abstract. The vast majority of Americans are scarcely interested in them. Only a small group of those who sympathize with communistic internationalism oppose them actively. A smaller group of those who understand what steps must be taken to preserve American democracy, to keep us out of war, and thereby to retain our liberties, only that very small handful is actively engaged on the right side of things. Today I shall show you in a very concrete manner how inefficient is a centralized government. Following that, I shall show you how to keep out of foreign entanglements which are devised to help the radicals and destroy American democracy by instituting a centralized government. Between the left and right extremities of American citizens, there stands the great middle mass of people who are indifferentists. Indifferent to the advances made by radicals, indifferent to the efforts made by those to save democracy and our Christian institutions. For the most part, these indifferentists are good people who are content to live life as they find it, to observe the law of least resistance, and to flow along in the tide of events which is directed either by the domination of those on the right or of those on the left. In my opinion, we on the right today find ourselves on the defensive, because those upon the left have been more successful recently in winning to their side, either by fair or foul means, great groups of the indifferentists. The majority of persons who belong neither to the right nor to the left fail to appreciate the practical truth expressed by Christ when he said, "He who is not with me is against me." Or perhaps, unimpressed by the events which have happened in other nations, where small minorities of radicals toppled over constitutional government and the institutions of religion, the majority of Americans do not commit themselves to one side or the other for one of several reasons. They are ignorant of what is transpiring. They feel that it can't happen here. Or they deem it imprudent to commit themselves either for social or commercial reasons. On one point, however, all of us are in agreement and always will be. All are anxious for a new deal. All want economic liberty as well as political liberty. Oh, it is more urgent than ever for us to curb the exploitation of big finance and big business. However, in seeking this objective, we are not content to replace big business with big government, because that is un-American and undemocratic. All Americans are anxious to see a living annual wage established for labor. But we are not content to entertain the error of arriving at this objective through the method of a political labor party, which would operate to the detriment of agriculture, business, and the other divisions of our citizens. All citizens are anxious to elevate human rights above questionable financial rights. But we are not content to adopt unsound principles wedded either to deflation or inflation. To acquire these objectives, Americans need a change only in the methods used by our government. It is not necessary, say we on the right, to replace democracy with communism or fascism or big government of any kind, so much as it is necessary to give democracy a chance to operate according to the pattern of our Constitution. Thomas Jefferson, the third president of the United States, did not believe in a centralized bureaucratic government any more than did Mr. Roosevelt before he was elected to office. He believed, to quote his words, that government should restrain men from injuring one another, but should leave them otherwise free to follow their own pursuit of industry and employment. This philosophy is similar to that expressed by our chief executive, who several years ago said, "It is time to make an effort to reverse the processes of concentration of power, which has made most American citizens helplessly dependent for their daily bread upon the favor of a very few." And all good Republicans, as well as Democrats, applaud these principles, provided these Republicans are true to the traditions of Abraham Lincoln, who said, "The principles of Jefferson are the definitions and axioms of a free society." In these abnormal days, days when pressure is being brought upon the President and Congress to centralize government, permit me to present to you a few premises from which you can conclude how impractical it is for us to consider a centralized government. The point I stress is this. These persons already have committed themselves to one side, to the leftist side, although they were innocent in having done so. they will not relinquish their position easily. They are imbued with an idea that it is either Christian or humanitarian to help the so-called Spanish Democrats, whom the leftists have pictured as the objects of a fanatic persecution. And they are positive that Franco and the rebels deserve to be defeated. All they are zealous in supporting the so-called loyalists, whose only loyalty is towards the red flag and all it represents. Men with no loyalty to humanity, none to truth, and none to Jesus Christ. Therefore, we cannot blame these persons for having been victimized, because we on the right seemingly lack the zeal, the spirit to do, which characterize the leaders on the left. But other loyal leaders have appeared in the past. Loyal leaders on the right who have called out to us in vain. Leaders amongst the Christian clergy and hierarchy. And recently, Archbishop Curley of Baltimore has spoken in the defense of Christianity, of Americanism, has spoken for the program of rightism, which those on the left have condemned. But despite all this gracious energy expended in the past by our peerless leaders, those on the left appear to have the ascendancy at the moment. They have had more success in one sense than have had we. Therefore, it appears that we rightists are on the defensive. Through the agency of the press, the radio, and the cinema, our opposing leaders have converted thousands to their cause. They have accused all who oppose them as favoring fascism. They have pictured all who oppose the loyalist communist side as reactionaries, destroyers of democratic rights, suppressors of civil rights, attackers of labor, promoters of the Red Scare, anti-Semites, and fomenters of religious and racial hatred. I ask you, are these leftist leaders telling their followers that 3/4 of the Spanish territory is now in the hands of Franco and his troops? Are they informing the American public that in the territory held by Franco, there is no starvation, no lack of wheat? Are they telling the American public that every nation in the world outside of the United States, Russia, and France has recognized either de jure or de facto not the government of the loyalist communists, but the government of the rebel Franco, a rebel for Christ's sake, a rebel for humanity's sake? When was the American public informed that the loyalist government in the first place conspired against all democratic processes to steal the election that brought them into power? They had the majority of elected representatives, if you will. But this majority was obtained through the trickery of gerrymandering congressional districts and stuffing the ballot box. When was the American public fully informed that every Christian church and chapel in loyalist Spain was closed and desecrated? When were we told in the public press that 12,500 ministers of the gospel and religious were murdered because they were Christians? That 300,000 non-combatants, women, helpless little children, and men were massacred by these loyalist communists because the little children loved Jesus Christ? When was publicity given to the official letter written to the world by the bishops of Spain in protest to this slaughterhouse policy, I will call it, which the American League for Peace and Democracy is supporting today? When did the American press inform us that for 2 years, this supposedly Frankenstein of a Franco, this supposed monster, has held control of the entire water supply for Madrid, but because he's a Christian and a humanitarian, he has not cut off that water supply? Oh, it is true that 95% of those who professed any religion in Spain were Roman Catholics, but as far as Spain is concerned, Catholicity is Christianity. This organization, the American League for Peace and Democracy, shows its red hand when it piously opposes the advances of fascism, but utters not one word of condemnation against communism. Communism, the hater, the destroyer, the murderer of Christians. Certainly, we American rightists do not uphold fascism. But most certainly, we do not fear to oppose atheistic communism and those who support it, even by their silence. All last week, the hotels at Washington were crowded with delegates from various radical organizations, more than 200 of them, meeting in session with the League for Peace and Democracy to pressure our government to lift the embargo against Spain and send arms and ammunition and money to help the loyalist communists defeat the Christian rebels. All fulsome publicity prepared for their success. Campaigns were carried on in the press, on the radio, and in the cinema for the silent lies of communism hold so much power. It was a campaign patterned after the same persecution propaganda to which we were exposed a few weeks ago. It was a campaign supported by a plenitude of publicity against fascism or Nazism, but not a word of publicity against communism. A plenitude of publicity against fascist or Nazi atrocities, but scarcely a word against communist butcheries. For all this zealous activity on the part of the League for Peace and Democracy, I congratulate its officers. I congratulate their hired publicists, their zealous supporters, including the internationalists and the warmongers. My friends, they, and not we, have made space.
Spain's business, America's business. They, and not we, have made the communism the cause of Congress. They, and not we, have succeeded in regimenting public opinion on their side to such an extent that it is almost hopeless for those of us who are opposed to both fascism and communism and to the crimson persecution of Christians to raise our voice for the only decent element left in Spain. They and not we have given reason why such broadcasts as this are sounding over the airways of America. My friend, we are not so much interested in Spain, despite all these atrocities, as we are interested in the future welfare of America. Because the American League for Peace and Democracy wants us to lift the embargo against Spain so that we can send arms and munitions to the communist loyalists, so that America will be interjected into war, and so that America, once entered into war, will lose its democracy. There's not a child of you in this audience who does not see this sequence of facts. Will Congress and the President lift the embargo? My friends, I am of the opinion at the moment that the American League for Peace and Democracy will persuade Congress that it is the desire of the American people to have them do so. Will communism conquer in Spain as a result of all this? Will murders of Christians be multiplied? Will churches, now in Franco's domain, be closed? Will Christ again be crucified in the person of 300,000 more victims? It is my opinion at the moment that these things will happen. Thanks to the American League for Peace and Democracy and to their efficient propaganda. And the more important question for America: will America thereby take its first step into the world war, a step committing itself on the side of communism, a step away from the traditional policy of George Washington, a step in favor of the warmongers and their profits, a step which commits us to participate in the business of blood? At the moment, I am of the opinion that these things will happen. The only way for America to keep out of war is to keep on keeping out of war. And this means neutrality. This means not engaging in the sale of arms, munitions, and implements of war to the haters of Christianity. This means not lifting the embargo on Spain or on any other nation. Again, as I stand beneath the crimson cross of communism upon which the brothers of Christ have been crucified, again I humbly bow before the Pontius Pilate, the high priests, the Annases and the Caiaphases, who reincarnated in the official dumb of certain leagues and organizations favoring internationalism and favoring communism, have all but won the day. Congratulations, gentlemen. Gentlemen of the League, we on the right have slept, perchance, while you have walked in converting the indifferentists, the good people of America, to your cause, a cause that supports the loyalists who are loyal to Lenin, to communism, and to Antichrist. In a pamphlet entitled What is Being Done, issued by the League for Peace and Democracy, What is Being Done to Lift the Embargo and Destroy the United States of America with the Communist Cause, we read the following report of what you assert you have done to win the day. You have circularized thousands of people in their special field. You have spread leaflets and pamphlets throughout America. You have struck off delegations to interview the president. And in another pamphlet entitled What You Are Asked to Do, a pamphlet by which you instructed the American people what to do, you told them to set up directing or coordinating committees in their localities. You asked them to appoint a lift the embargo conference in each community. You have asked them to organize and telephone and wire campaigns requesting individuals to write and wire the president. And you have upset America, making Congress believe that you are on the right side, Christ. My friend, I ask you as I did last Sunday, shall we Americans engage in foreign entanglements? Shall we consider ourselves the policemen of the world? Shall we forget the existence of that experience of the World War and revive the repudiated policy of President Wilson to fight the battles of so-called democracy on every foreign field? Shall we limit our opposition to fascists or Nazis? Or shall we include opposition to the communists? Shall we lift the embargo on Spain like lifting Christ upon his cross? Shall we, I ask? Oh, it matters little if for this broadcast I shall be accused as one who stirreth up the multitudes. Long enough we have been passive as we have watched our country receding from the philosophy of Jefferson and Washington and adopting the philosophy of a centralized government, which will surely result if we lift the embargo. Long enough have we been patient while the methods employed by party politicians have tended to increase our national misery. Our opponents have thrown down the challenge to us. They have issued their call to action. When, I ask you, will we begin to act more vigorously? And my answer is, today. We will not be deceived by the spurious lie that Italy and Germany are assisting the Spanish rebels. The whole truth is that Russia assisted the Spanish loyalists a year before an Italian soldier set foot on the soil of Spain. The whole truth is that the American money was spent to purchase loyalist communist silver at almost double its value, spent by our officials in order to help the cause of slaughtering Christian men and women and children. And the whole truth is that the American youth was regimented in our schools under the label of the Abraham Lincoln Brigade to help in converting the land of Spain into a colony of Russia. The most important truth outside the fact that the loyalists are sworn to destroy the last vestige of Christianity is the truth that America must not engage in the blood business. That America shall not be deceived by a fictitious organization known as the American League for Peace and Democracy. And that America shall hold itself free from foreign entanglements and preserve its democracy by not taking the forced and irrevocable step that leads to war. There are not quite so many supporters, my friends, of our cause as you may imagine. I say this to you who have dedicated your lives to the rightist side. And I say this to those of you who are still identified with the great mass of indifferentists. Too careless to act, too proud to fight, too prudent to commit yourselves. You who are so criminally prudent that you will stand idly by and commit your children and your neighbor's children to the diabolical cause of communism or dictatorship. Oh, too proud to fight. Too dignified to commit yourself. Too prudent to participate in this quarrel when millions, literally millions of your fellow Christians are being done to death by those who hate your constitutional democracy, who hate your Christianity, and who hate you, if they were courageous enough to say so. Oh, they have persecuted me, and they will persecute you also, was the promise which Christ made to all of us. My friends, you can't escape unless in this battle of the ages, while we, the Christians, meet face to face in concrete battle with the cause of Antichrist, the cause of communism, you can't escape unless you take sides against both communism and fascism and for Americanism and for Christianity. Therefore, I have arranged with the telegraph companies to stand by these next few hours to receive your telegrams. Whether you can afford it or not, send a night telegram to your senator today or tomorrow. Telephone your friends, persuade them to do likewise, and let the United States government know that we refuse to be regimented into another world war through the back door of the Spanish embargo. To whom will you address the night telegram? I repeat, address it to your United States Senator at Washington. Every telegram will be counted as it leaves. In your own words, politely say, keep neutral. Do not lift the embargo. Thus, those who are parading under the name of being opponents to fascism and proponents of peace, those who are really friends of communism and devotees to internationalism and dictatorship, they may experience a reverse from which they will never recover. If you in this audience act in unison with your neighbor, with your friends, with your fellow citizens scattered from north to south and east to west, in signifying to your United States Senator that America is not in the blood business. For years, your opponents have been active in designing methods intended to plunge us into a world war, intended to make of America a centralized government. They are the ones who have challenged you today by publicizing their call to action, by convening their Congress at Washington last week. They have challenged you to meet them with counteraction and counter-propaganda. I ask you, what is your action? What is your contribution? Not a one of us in this crisis, the backdoor crisis for an entrance into the World War, not one of us can afford to be an indifferentist. Today, my friends, is your day. Next week may be too late. Today, when, whether you can afford it or not, you will send a night telegram to Washington, to your senator, containing the thought, hands off the embargo. America is not in the blood business. Today you have your Christian American opportunity to strike together against communism and its supporters, and for Christ and America, the spirits of 300,000 fellow Christians martyred in Spain, whose bodies are rotting in the fields. Those spirits lift their hands to you and cry out, at least you, my friends, have pity on me. God wills it. They shall not pass. And you, my friends, will not fail.
You heard the program of action outlined by the American League for Peace and Democracy. Compare it with Father Coughlin's plan. Which do you choose, war or peace? How many of you are willing to strike a blow in favor of democracy, in favor of keeping America free from foreign entanglements, in favor of Christianity? The telegraph offices in your district will be open for a few hours tonight and all day tomorrow. Send a night telegram to your senator pleading with him, do not lift the embargo on Spain. Stay neutral. If you cannot afford to send a telegram, at least you can afford to send a short letter to your senator today. Copies of the address to which you have listened will be mailed out to those who request a copy of Father Coughlin's book this week. Write directly to him at Royal Oak, Michigan. Announcer Franklin Mitchell.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have presented the regular Sunday afternoon address of Father Charles E. Coughlin from Royal Oak, Michigan. The thoughts and opinions contained in this address were entirely those of the speaker and in no way reflect the policies of this station.
This was a presentation on your dial at 1250 kilocycles. WHBI, Hoyt Brothers Incorporated, Newark, New Jersey.